Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast hosted by the BYU Management Society. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
Each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
And if your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to contact you. And each time we do one of these interviews, I am so excited for the opportunity. I feel like I learn more than anyone else by virtue of the chance to listen to each of our amazing guests. And today, I think you'll be extra interested as we have the opportunity to meet with Daryl Eaves. Daryl Eaves is the executive producer of The Chosen, the highest grossing crowdfunded movie or television project of all time. The Chosen series reaches across religious boundaries to give viewers from all walks of life a non-denominational, non-Hollywood portrayal of the life of Jesus Christ and the people who encountered him. Daryl's unique skills in audience development and project distribution account for much of the project's worldwide exposure and success. Daryl has worked on countless video projects for 2 decades, but when he came across The Chosen, he felt like everything he had done in his career and personal life had been leading to this project. It's his number one career passion and focus. Daryl is CEO of Creatus, a video marketing strategy company, and the founder of VidSummit, an annual event in Los Angeles for video creators and marketers. He has helped 27 YouTube channels go from zero to more than 1 million subscribers, and he has generated 78 billion views on YouTube. Daryl's personal and career mission is to help individuals, brands, and businesses make a positive impact in the world. But his greatest passion is his family, his wife, Carolyn, and their 5 amazing children, Ellie, Logan, Kelton, Thatcher, and Bridger. Daryl, thank you for being with us and welcome.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Daryl, and how you got started with The Chosen.
That's a kind of a loaded question here. Just tell a little bit about yourself. I grew up in Utah, and I love the state. I love where I live. When I got fascinated into video, I think is kind of a pivotal moment in my life. I was 8 years old, and I saw a Super Bowl commercial, and I was just blown away by that Super Bowl commercial. It was a Wrigley Scott commercial for Apple, and it was 1984, and they're just introducing the Macintosh. And I was like so like in that world, and I'm like, oh, man. That is so great. I want to make commercials like this one day. And so I just kind of went on the path, and then I started to survey people of what commercials they liked, what they didn't like. And I just carried this little notebook to school and to different places, and people thought I was really weird. I guess I was, if you look at it that way. And at that time, one of the most amazing ad campaigns that I think existed in last century is Where's the Beef with Wendy's. I think it was one of the most brilliant campaigns. It made me laugh. And I remember just kind of waiting with the VCR to record it so I could go share it with my friends. And that's kind of where it all started. And I fast forward, I went on an LDS mission to South America, came back. And I just wanted to work for an ad agency that would make Super Bowl commercials. That was kind of my goal. And I went through school, got my degree at Southern Utah University. And then I got to a point of decision. I just barely had a baby, newborn, and family's everything for me. And I started to think a little bit differently. I'm like, man, do I really want to leave where my daughter can go to grandma and grandpa's house just down the road and her best friends could be her cousins? And so I had a couple of job offers in LA with some really big firms that do produce Super Bowl commercials. It was kind of entry level. And then I had a couple in Chicago and New York, and I'm like, dude, what do I do? You know? And it was the moment that I decided, you know what? I can't do that. I'm not willing to give that up to go on that career path because family is so important with me. And I wanted my kids and future kids to experience, small town Utah. and that might seem insane at the time because it was like 1999, but I started my own agency and was working online and realized that the world is all online and I could get clients around the world very quickly. And that's how it all started. And I grew that agency very directly. And I just in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, only if I could still do that. But it wasn't until 2005, and I discovered a site called YouTube. And I realized very quickly, you know, we switched our agency to focus in on that because I just had a knack for it. I had a passion for it. But it wasn't that I wanted to make Super Bowl commercials. So as soon as I kind of really went in depth, I just wanted to be able to have commercials that would impact people and also have them talk about it. And then I realized it wasn't commercials. It was just video. before you know it, I was doing commercials. I actually did the most viral video ad of all time. It was the Squatty Potty Pooping Unicorn. I was the executive producer, project lead with the Harmon brothers. Jeffrey Harmon was the other executive producer, just one of the most amazing creative minds. But that's kind of how we interwove and just built my career, helping brands, businesses, YouTube creators really get found on the platform and online, and then grow the audience and develop that audience and then translate that audience into money. And the reason why I share that story is because along that journey, I'd see these YouTubers that were just putting out some horrible content that was like for my kids. And I didn't want my kids watching it. And I'm like, this is like horrible stuff. And there wasn't like an active force of someone helping people that were net positive creators or good role models for kids. And there wasn't that many good role models for kids at the time. And so I was looking at every chance to elevate people that were putting out great content. So I worked with the Piano Guys, Studio C. I mean, the list goes on. 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, found a smaller creator, Mr. Beast, who now gets a billion video views a month. You know, worked with him since then, and we've owned a couple businesses together. But it's just like trying to counterbalance that. And so I really found, hey, if I can find people that have light or could project light, I'm a very good amplifier. And so I try to amplify what they're doing through the skill sets that God has given me and the way that I'm just wired. And that's just been the course of my career. So I've always been looking for projects. And then two, projects come to me that it's like, hey, this would be really good if we're able to help out on that. And so I help out on all these different little projects. And so fast forward to how I got involved in The Chosen. In the intro, it's talking about the conference I put on every year. It's like the biggest YouTubers on the planet come and converge at my conference. And I always invite the keynote speakers to come back. And one of the keynote speakers was Jeffrey Harmon, who was the executive producer of the Squatty Potty ad with me. And we've done several projects before. He just says, hey, you know, I'm coming. Is my ticket still good? I'm saying, sure. And he comes and I'm putting a conference on. He's like, Daryl, I have to show you this video. I'm like, couldn't you just email it to me? I mean, why did you fly all the way from Provo to LA to show me a video? He's like, no, you got to see this. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, I don't have time for this. Like, I'm literally putting on a conference. I went walking away. And then in the back of my mind, I says, wait, he just traveled. He didn't want to come to the event. He wanted to show me a video. And he just traveled from Provo to this event to show me a video. I need to go watch it. And I says, fine, let's go find an area. And so we went into a room. And I didn't have a lot of time because like it's very chaotic, you know, hosting an event. And he pulls out his Chromebook. It was like 8 inches. And we watched basically a short film that a guy made for his church for his Christmas Eve services. And it was called The Shepherd. And when I watched that, I was like, holy cow, this is like really good because I love great content. And I can look past like when people don't have a lot of budget and they're trying to do it. And I just says, okay, super low budget. I get that. But the story development and the dialogue and just the lead up and how they're developing these characters are so impactful. And then it was kind of showcasing the journey of the shepherd, of how it was intertwined of them witnessing the birth of Jesus Christ and being the first ones to praise baby Jesus. And so we get to a point where the shepherd gets kicked out of a synagogue, and then he, basically gets interrupted on a busy, you know, corner. And Joseph and Mary were coming into town and wanted water, asked where the well was, and he told them where it was. And then he looked down and says, no, let me give you the water. I'm like, man, that's so symbolic. And my mind was like going a million miles an hour. Get a knock on the door. Daryl, you got to go over and fix this emergency. And I go out. And as I was leaving, I turned to Jeffrey and I says, I don't care where this, I go, I know where this is going. I don't care what I do. I don't care if I just have to hold the light. I need to be a part of this project. He goes, good, because that's what I needed you to do. You need to meet with the creator, Dallas Jenkins, next week. And so the next week, met Dallas up in Provo, and we hit it off. He was everything. Like I just kind of envisioned how the marketing and how we could build an audience around this guy. And then two, you know, if we could just make it, you know, make the, what I believe that could be done about the life of Jesus Christ. If he could create that, I think we could get that out to the world in a unique way. And we started that day. We started a company, him and I, zero money in the bank, zero social following, but we had a really good idea. And then two, it felt like I was led up to that moment. And I had a point of clarity where it was like, hey, all your career, you've been building audiences and you've been putting out light. This is the light that you need to put out. And so that's where I went all in on it. And I got super, super excited to be a part of the project. That's how it got all started in that realm.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I think most people, they see these titles on a screen and they wonder, what does an executive producer do? How would you answer that for your role at The Chosen?
So I'm actually the CEO of the company. So I run the organization, and then we don't have a CMO because I'm doing that too. So it's just like doing all the marketing effort behind it. And then I work with income that's coming in and then income that's dispersing. I have a COO, it's controller, that handles a lot of the budgeting and stuff like that. I used to do that on my own, but we have that. And then when the seasons are funded, you know, it's allocating budgets to our production company and making sure, because I mean, we'll have, you know, thousands of people that we're paying, you know, and all these different interactions. So we just make sure that's going from there. And then on top of it, it's like really getting the visibility for the project. So every executive producer does something different. Some of them, it's just on their name on it, just for credibility. But for us, it's like we're actively, you know, pushing and promoting it. And Dallas is a writer director. He's over the content of the show, of the content online. You know, he and I work together, and we also have a team that help us put everything together. So
tell us a little bit about the success of The Chosen and why in your mind has it been so successful?
I'll start with the last question first. Why has it been successful? I do believe that we live in a very dark world, and anything that has light is going to attract people that are looking for light. And some of that they're actively seeking, and then other people that there's just that draw. And I've been able to see that over the course of my career. And that's kind of the style of audience development that we do, is like really find really good, wholesome content and then to amplify it. Right. So the success of The Chosen was a very hard task. We've been doing this for over 4 years. It's been, we call like crawling on glass. It's the most difficult project I've ever worked on, and nothing even remotely compares to it. It was small wins. We would get to a place, what we call Red Sea moment. Basically, it's where Moses and the children of Israel were fleeing Egypt and had the army of Egypt coming ready to destroy them, get to the Red Sea, and we're like, okay, you're stuck. We require miracles a lot. And that's when God like showcases his miracles, opens up the Red Sea, and we see the path that we need to do. And I think he knows the personalities of, of course he does. He knows the personalities of the people that are, you know, making the decisions here. And I just don't believe in a couple things. I don't believe anything's not possible. I believe everything's possible. We just haven't thought of the way to do it, or the way hasn't opened up. It's inbred in me of just thinking differently and thinking outside the box and realizing that. And so there's two things that we're really focused in on. We're not focused in on records, even though we broke the all-time crowdfunding record in film and television. Now that we have the show out and we have not only one season, but two, it's literally getting it to 1 billion people. And for us, the easiest way to get 1 billion people is go where they're at, is on the phone. And we knew that we need to get the app. Our distributor partner, Angel Studios, Jeffrey Harmon and the team there, they've been so great to help us get the app and things that we think that would be needed to really get it out to 1 billion people. But You know, things like this is just making it available. And then the second stage was the moment that we made it for free and had a model of revenue that was able to come into it in a unique, genuine way, made us profitable and made it so that we not only funded season one or season two, but we're almost funded for season three now. And, you know, making it free, making it that there's no barrier of entry. That's the way you reach to 1 billion people. And then two, along the way, you know, as people get more involved or more vested, that's where some money can come that will lead to funding future seasons and episodes.
And I've appreciated it. It's been fun to watch this unique marketing effort of funding, funding a project like this, so it can be very expensive, as I would imagine. Yep. So with distribution in general, obviously this is reaching more and more people. Do like the major distributors like Netflix or Amazon play a role in this, or is that sort of not even in the scope of the project?
I wouldn't do anything with Netflix unless they paid us a ton of money and still gave us the opportunity to put it everywhere else, just because they like to own it and then leverage what they have. So you have to come on Netflix, right? But the marketing approach right now is let's put it out everywhere and then have season one out everywhere. And then it leads to the app, right? Because ultimately we want to own the experience because we feel like we can do a better customer experience. And when you own the data, that's where you're able to do so much more. And we do a lot more than just put out the show. We have a lot of live streaming and events, you know, and you know, we're doing just ninja type stuff marketing. We're on Peacock, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on Amazon. You know, in fact, next month we're actually premiering on over the air station in France. You know, that they're showing season one. You know, we definitely want it out there in the world to consume it. And as we're doing these relationships, yes, the money's not as great. I mean, just getting the distribution out there. It's just more when you do exclusive distribution where you're not going to send it out anywhere else. That's when they pay the big bucks. But, you know, we're banking on just having it go through the app and then being a couple seasons ahead where they have to consume it if they want to be up to date. And so it's been good. But, you know, we're learning and growing and we'll evolve. We just analyze and adjust. That's what we do.
And this may be a question for Dallas, but how do you decide what to tell exactly as is and what to take liberties with in telling the story?
So I can answer that question because that was a concern for all of us going into it. I mean, if you're going to tell the greatest story ever told, like, how do you approach it? And for us, I've watched every religious piece of content that had to do with Jesus just because of the nature of who I am. And they were all bad. Like, they were so bad. It was like the worst content in the world. I'm like, man, here's the most influential person that ever walked the face of the earth. And you make him look like a pansy, you know, and he's not. Like, I just, it would just frustrate me to all get out. And anyway, don't even get me going on this, but like, let me kind of explain. They were just so cautious that it needed to be word for word exactly what the Bible says, and it should be that way, right? But it doesn't. If you don't have context of what was like leading up to that moment, then it's kind of like without power. So what we did is like the moments in the Bible that will be shown from the Bible will be exactly what the Bible is. So we use the English Standard Version of that, you know, in the dialogue and stuff like that, but it will be those conversations and those scripture verses that are there. And it will be what it is, because we're not the Bible. We're not going to change the Bible. We're not an addition to the Bible. You know, we're a TV show. But when it comes to that moment, we want to make sure that we're accurate because Hollywood has never been accurate with that. Have you ever seen Noah? I mean, if not, go watch it. I'm like, where is this even going on? Like, what book are they getting this from? Like, oh no, this would be a great idea. And that's not a good idea. That's dumb. So anyway, we're very, very cautious with that. But we look at what is plausible. So let me give you the perfect example of this. Okay, so we know from history, we know from the Bible that Peter lived in Capernaum. He was a fisherman. He had boats. He had a brother named Andrew. Peter also had a mother-in-law because Jesus healed his mother-in-law. So we knew that was going on. So he had to be married, right? Doesn't necessarily talk about his wife. We also know the publican in Capernaum was Matthew, who was a Jew who was working for Rome and was collecting taxes for the Jews. You know that Peter had to have interaction with a publican. And if there's only one publican in the area, it had to be Matthew. So you know that there could have been some friction, right? So you know all this is going on. And we know James and John actually lived there because they helped Peter with a miracle that was occurring, and they used to fish together. Okay, we have all that dynamic is going on. Well, what is the backstory? How would Peter look at Matthew? What would be plausible? Well, from a Jew's perspective of someone jumping over their traditions and going to the enemy, they're not looked on, they're frowned upon. they're not very loved, right? So you know there had to be some type of friction, right? And you know that Peter's personality could have been impulsive and aggressive. And so he might've gambled a little bit. He might've fought a little bit. Well, that's plausible, right? You know, it was rough in the first century. You know that Rome had taxes, but you might not have known it was up 70% of everything that they took, Rome took, you know, and you know that there was the oppression of food and water. They were controlling that just because that's how they controlled the people at the time. And so all that dynamic could come. And so what we want to do is give people personalities and characters. That's the plausibility of what we read in the scriptures and in history to lead up to that moment where that moment in the Bible means something. You have some context to it. Now, is it accurate? We don't know. It's plausible. But what it says in the Bible happened, you know, and whether it's, you know, meeting a Samaritan woman at the well, keep in mind, there's a couple things here. First off, for a Jew to meet with a woman in private or in public was a sin to do that alone. And then why would Jesus send all his disciples in to go get food? That doesn't make any sense, but he did. That's what's in the Bible, right? And as they're coming back and that interaction with their enemy, the Samaritans was the enemies of the Jews. You know that to be fact, because that's what was even said in the scriptures and everything that was going on for those thousands of years of infighting, right? And yet that occurred too. We just give a little bit more context, a little bit more flavor of those moments that were actually documented in the Bible.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm curious, you know, as you've reviewed different attempts to of the production of the greatest story ever told, did you come across like certain were there certain principles or that maybe turned into rules in the production process to say, this is something we're not doing, this is something we are doing in order to avoid some of those not so awesome approaches?
Yeah, no, it's pretty simple. We want to be authentic. People have problems and everyone's afraid to show problems, especially when it comes to anyone. And everyone has issues. We're not afraid to show people's problems or issues or hypothetically make up issues that they would be dealing with. You see that even disciples that are called actually have physical impairment in real life. We cast them for purpose because it was like, hey, that'd be great for someone that sees all these healings and haven't been healed or doesn't have the faith to be healed, or there's some interesting dynamic that could be done there, right? And it's like really looking at authenticity. So everyone has a personality, everyone has a past, and it's not sugarcoating anything. And so the authenticity is what we're looking at. And everyone tries to just glaze over it. They try to make Jesus talk in King James English, be thou and thy, and you know, this perfect deity, but he was human. He was part human. He had human relationships. He had a mom. He had friends, you know, he had disappointment. But not just the stoic Jesus that has no emotion, you know, that we couldn't do that. And so that was it. And then two, everything's too clean. I don't mean like in the sense of, you know, more like it's all sanitized in the sense of the robes look perfect. First century was dirty. They didn't shower for months, you know, it needed to look dirty, you know? So, yeah. So the principles is, you know, Jesus was a disruptor. He was, and he is. He disrupted what was going on and people's perceptions. And so the chosen is a disruptor, right? He wasn't doing the status quo. of what was expected. And then we look at just trying to keep an authentic angle. Like our goal is to actually not just reach a billion people, but we want a billion people to see an authentic Jesus. And we believe an authentic Jesus is a Jesus with a personality, a Jesus that actually took his role very seriously, but also had a playful side. You know, someone that if you needed a joke to lift you up, he was telling a joke. You know, and that rubbed a lot of people wrong, you know, in the beginning. They're like, oh, Jesus can't do that. I'm like, do you know if Jesus can't do that? I'm not going to put a box on Jesus, yeah. You know, but I remember this is pretty common when we first did it. Like everyone was so skeptical. We show the first episode and Jesus appears. The first time you see Jesus, he's in a bar. And he basically tells someone not to drink anymore, says this is not for you. And then there's like this little encounter. I had people come to me, Jesus would never go to a bar. I'm like, what the heck are you talking about, man? like who are you saying where Jesus will or won't go? Like I won't do that. You know, I do believe that he would have if he was there to go rescue the one. I think he'd go to the depths of hell to go rescue the one. And maybe that's the bar at that time. So
well, Daryl, you're so awesome. We are very appreciative for your time. And thank you so much for being with us today and for telling us a little bit of the story. It just makes me more excited.
Appreciate that.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Immoral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Have a great week.